The football playoffs squeezed into one small cup.
Setbacks pave the way for comebacks.
Track the playoffs now. This is 7 in Heaven.
You know what? It's not 7 in Heaven's fault. Give it to me, down and dirty. There we go. I was going to go, fine, give me the music. I go, no, it's not the bit's fault. All right, let's get through it quick because we got more audio to go through.
I have a ridiculous team on my 7 in Heaven.
Okay. You want to go first?
You put the Browns in.
No, I'm going to go first. I'm going to go first because you got the ridiculous one. Here we go. 1 through 7. Ready? These are teams that, again, we think are going to make the playoffs in the order we think they're going to make it. It's not a power rankings. Number 1, Kansas City. Number 2, Houston. And I'll tell you why. The schedule. I play schedule game here.
Yes, you do.
Their schedule.
That
now,
2 weeks in a row for them at 2?
No, I had Buffalo there at number 2 last week. Thank you for making me come and clarify that because Buffalo's defense still... And their schedule is a little bit tougher in the month of December than what you would have with Houston. So I'm actually going to put Kansas City 1, Houston number 2, Baltimore number 3, number 4, Buffalo, number 4, the AFC East champion, Buffalo Bills, number 5, I still think the Chargers can run their way into a playoff spot, the New York Jets at number 6, because I have more faith in them than the Denver Broncos and Bo Nix, because even though they won on Sunday, him and Sean Payton were getting into it on the sidelines. And then number 7, I still have Pittsburgh. As much as I regret it, I still have Pittsburgh.
So you have Pittsburgh in there. Okay.
Yes, sir. Go right on ahead.
All right. I think you may be... I don't know how frustrated you're going to be. I'll first tell you, but I do not have the 3-2 Sean Payton-led Denver Broncos in there. I teetered.
Wow.
I wondered. I didn't know what to do, but I did keep them out. So here is what I have.
Here you go.
I have Chiefs number 1. I have the Baltimore Ravens at number 2. This was tough. Either them or the Texans.
You put Baltimore number 2. Last week you had Buffalo.
I did. And I swapped them out. I think Baltimore is getting right back to their old bag of tricks. They're trying to figure out defensively. They're not good, but they have gone up against, so far this year, they've gone up against Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, and Dak Prescott. So, yeah, their secondary... looks like they're terrible right now, and they can't cover anybody. They've also played all the best quarterbacks in the league. I guess I'll throw Dak in there. I mean, he's good.
He's good in the regular season,
yeah,
certainly.
Yeah, certainly a really good regular season quarterback. Then I have the Texans, followed by the Buffalo Bills. Now, the wild cards, where it gets interesting. And I don't know. I don't think you can have a big complaint about anybody's wild card selections right now, judging by how mediocre all these teams look. I have Steelers getting the first one.
Lord.
I have the Chargers and then the Cincinnati Bengals.
Oh, come on.
At 1-4. You know, you said...
Come on, get your head out of your
you
ass.
You said that their season was over yesterday, and I'm like, Joe Burrow is still the second or third best quarterback in the NFL. Like, I'm still going to... I'm going to bet on that before I bet on which...
Who are they going to stop?
I get that, but who's going to stop them?
Who are they going to stop?
Who's going to stop them? They're getting better and better offensively.
Baltimore was able to stop them. I understand that. I think
Zach Taylor stopped them.
I mean, who the hell? Okay, well, if the coach is a problem, then they'll lose games because the coach is such a problem.
I wonder if Joe Burrow will just take matters into his own hands at this point. But remember, we're talking about the 7th team. So it's either them, the Broncos with Bo Nix, the Chargers.
So if that's the case, then should Deshaun Watson take matters into his own hands?
Is he capable of it?
Is he being held back by Kevin Stefanski?
So you see what we're dealing with, though, when we get to the wildcard teams. It's wide open. That's why the Bengals season's not over.
Like,
I will object to anybody who says their season's over.
Because the other teams are so questionable. The Bengals have a bit of a history there, so you can't. It's just, man, I see them at 1-4. That pass rush is just nothing. And it leaves that secondary, which isn't that good to begin with. They have not drafted tremendously well in the secondary. It leaves that secondary on an island. Like, the best player you've had there is Jesse Bates, and Jesse Bates is good, but he can't do it all by himself back there. He can't cover everybody, for crying out loud. The Bengals, next 3 of the next 4 games, according to Mitch. The Giants, Browns, Raiders. So those are winnable games. I will grant you that.
Oh, their fans are thinking they have to win all
but
3 of those.
Now it's like everything's a must-win for them if they're going to keep... I mean, they're below water, but if they're going to get their nose anywhere near to the surface, they have to win everything. They have to win that out on that schedule.
I wouldn't say they could do it if they had anybody else but Joe Burrow, right? Do we not still think Joe Burrow is... Where do you have him? We all have Mahomes
but
number one.
He wasn't the problem. He threw a bad one at the end of the game on Sunday, but...
Who's number 2? Who's the second best quarterback in the NFL right now? It's Jaden Daniels.
Oh, so wait, you're putting Burrow number one right now?
No, I'm saying Burrow, oh. I think, is the second best quarterback in the league.
Oh, yeah, Jaden Daniels is
Jaden's playing like it. Yeah. Jaden's definitely playing like it, but just on reputation and over time, I think it's Burrow.
I usually circle one of the teams you put out there. I thought it was going to be Denver. I'm going to circle Cincinnati. I think that's interesting. I can't scream at you and yell at you for that because, I mean, there is history there. All right, coming up at 7:20, we got Jason Lloyd who's going to join us on the show. I want to get back to this audio. He was asked, Kevin Stefanski yesterday, see, you got to look deeper than the we got to coach better, we got to play better stuff. There's always that meaning, and Lima's very good at finding it. Yesterday, he was asked amongst the questions, you know, do you have the power to make these decisions? He's the head coach. He said yes, this, that, and the other. He was also asked, does ownership have a say on Watson's status?
So to confirm, ownership isn't having a say in, you know, whether Deshaun is still sticking as starting quarterback.
Yeah, I wouldn't get into all the specifics. I think you guys know that we make great decisions together. I obviously talk to Andrew about everything we do. We talk to ownership about everything we do. That's just how we operate.
Was a no. It's never a yes.
It's still the collaboration thing. We're all working together. I think.
Does he have the ability to call the Haslams and go, hey, just so you know, I'm going to make this change. And then they go, okay. You're the head coach.
Well, yeah. They could always say,
they own the billion-dollar team.
Well, owners check in. Owners check in. Some of them check in daily, Jerry Jones. Some of them check in once a week. Some of them, you know, when Randy Lerner was in charge, he didn't check in at all. He just said, I heard you guys go do your thing.
But how serious is a quarterback in a football team?
It's everything. It's vital.
Everything, right?
That's why I think Cincinnati still has a chance.
If I called Keith right now, the Marble Mouth, and I said, Keith, I know we're risking an FCC violation, but I'm about to say this next. And he would go, okay, you'll do that at your own peril. Could they very well do that to them going, okay, you will do that at your own peril?
Like your job's on the line if you've made the wrong decision.
Of course, yes. Because you could always say, I've made my decision. It's for the better of the football team.
I don't even think you have to be told that. I think Stefanski knows this league. He knows what's going on. I don't think Stefanski's walking around. Two-time coach of the year. He knows who he works for. He knows who he was warned about working for before he took the job.
He also knows he now has a four-year extension parachute on what it is. And everybody outside of Cleveland keeps telling me that he's going to, and I got no reason to disbelieve him, by the way.
But the parachute's only the money. The parachute is not that I get to stay here and be employed as the coach.
And he could always look at this and go, well, I got this quarterback that I'm saddled with that refuses to learn this. I got this offensive coordinator they've saddled me with that maybe I do or maybe I don't want. These are things that I'm speculating right now as of this point because it looks like this was an arranged marriage, as you've brought up several times, Tone. So if I'm Kevin Stefanski, I'm going, at some point, you have to go, they've put me with a quarterback that, maybe Kevin wanted him, by the way. I have a quarterback right now that can't get the job done. That's the first wrong decision. Now they've put me with an offensive coordinator that's getting in my way, that I have to call his offensive plays, that I do not trust. That's another bad decision. If they fire me, I might end up getting to go to a better situation after all this, and they're going to pay me to go away. I need to do what's best for my football team. If this continues, which it seems that it's going to, he's going to have to make a very strong decision at some point.
Yes.
That will have long-term ramifications that he may not have to answer for because he'll be with the Atlanta Falcons or something like that in the future.
And I know fans are done hearing about collaboration, whatever. They're done hearing about that. But I am focused on the players. We're going to have a player in studio here in less than 2 hours. And those players are not going to sit there and listen to, well, we have to collaborate. We need to all talk. All of us need to get together and put our heads together and find best practices and have guardrails and look at analytics. No, those players want a leader on the sidelines who's going to make the tough decisions. And that leader is Kevin Stefanski. And Kevin can talk there all he wants about, well, the owner checks in and we will talk to Andrew and that's how we make every decision. Hey, when you know what hits the fan in the course of a game, you don't have the wherewithal to do that. There is no opportunity to get Jimmy Haslam on board and sit inside one of those conference rooms and everybody talk.
You can't call up to the booth. They've already tried that once. Guy got suspended for a month.
They
over.
Have. And they can't. And they also
actually,
can't.
He called down.
And they also can't do a go-to meeting with Paul DePodesta. That's not happening in the course of a game when you know what hits the fan.
It's kind of hard to link that up. You're only allowed to look at still shots on that soft surface touch. I don't know if you can call up San Diego.
They only have DePodesta for the first 15 seconds. It cuts off after that.
Isaac and Shaker, you're next to Isaac's laughing his ass off. Isaac, you're first up on the fan.
Y'all crack me up, man.
Damn it.
Y'all, you guys are the best show that I ever listened to in Cleveland.
Well, thank you.
I don't know how much that credit that gets you, but I love you guys. I know other shows listen to you to get their subjects. I know that much. I said, Jesus,
if they're smart, they do. Go ahead there,
yeah,
Isaac.
Yeah. Well, he must be smart. But, yeah, I'm going here. Yeah, listen. Caller before you, a couple of callers back said that Kevin Stefanski was a great coach and he won Coach of the Year. But wait, I'm trying to put two and two together because he can't be Coach of the Year. He has to share that if this is what I'm hearing is true, because it seems like to me the bus is moving and it seems like to me he ran that bus over somebody. It seems like to me he backed it up. So if he's Coach of the Year, that means Barry's co-coach of the year with this guy. So he can't have his cake and eat it too, if that make any sense. But then on the other hand, I'm looking at the players and I'm looking at the way they're playing. Seems to me, like you said, that they lost the locker room. This is my opinion. And that the players don't want to play, because you can't tell me that Ron Jones digressed that much to the point where he had gotten this bad, or the entire line, or Bill Callahan was that good, or Kareem Hunt is better than the other running backs that year. Flacco's playing better. You can't tell me. So somebody is making some pretty bad decisions. And if Kevin Stefanski had these guys running this offense like he had them running last year, Hunt, the quarterback, Kent Flacco, all these guys, and all these guys are gone, and they look like crap now. Somebody has to be to blame. Maybe it is a group thing. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't.
Well,
but one thing
if,
about it.
If this continues,
he can't be Coach of the Year.
Well, Isaac, I mean, he was Coach of the Year, and thank you very much for the call. Like, we got to get to a point where it's like, all right, you were Coach of the Year. Let's move on. And if it's a collaborative thing, okay. Well, if it's all your fault, then I guess you'll all have to answer for it. Except DiBadesta. He never answers for anything. But Andrew Berry and the coaching staff and Kevin Stefanski, they'll all be in the hook for that. Let's go to Jason Lloyd from The Athletic. He's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline, where one of the sentences in his latest article is, quote, "There are fires everywhere and not enough hoses to go around." Hello.
Hi. That's not the one I thought you'd pick. That's not the line I thought you'd pick.
Which line did you think I'd pick? Which one?
The infection.
The what?
He's an infection on the organization.
Okay. Well, no, he said gear. Insurrection.
Well, that's what I thought he said, too. I didn't know. An insurrection on the organization, Lord.
Welcome to Crosstalk.
I thought you'd been watching Cuomo, too. Go ahead, Tone.
All right, so we played the Stefanski audio, and you heard a lot of the same platitudes about we got to coach it better or whatever. But when he was asked, and then there was a series of follow-ups about who is making the decision to either play the quarterback or bench the quarterback, he says, well, I always talk to Andrew Berry, and then there is some collaboration, and then Jimmy Haslam. My point, Jason, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, is the players don't want to hear about collaboration when what needs to be done needs to be done. It has to be the head coach. Do they believe the coach is empowered to make the necessary decisions?
Do they? Are you asking me, do they believe
yes.
it? Do the players believe it?
Yes.
I think the players know which organization they play for and how involved the people upstairs are. I think everybody probably knows that. I'll walk it all the way back. I know just even mentioning this name brings up a war zone, but you know, when Baker was playing through the injury in 21, that decision was made above Kevin. We've talked about that. I've said that 100 times because they had to make a decision on a contract and whether or not they were going to extend him. And so even though he was hurt and banged up, I don't know necessarily if that was entirely Kevin's decision to keep running him out there. Because the organization was trying to make a decision, and I wholeheartedly believe the same thing here, that I don't think it's Kevin's decision. That I think it's been taken out of his hands. Listen,
so he's gained no power. Hold on, Jason. He has gained no power. I mean, we know he got an extension at the same time of Andrew Berry, and I asked the question at the time. If Kevin Stefanski does not have more power now after two Coach of the Years, two times he's taken the Browns to the playoffs, all the different quarterbacks he has been able to build stable offenses with, if he doesn't have any more power now, why would he even want to be here?
Well, that's the flip side to it, is coach the team. you're the head coach. Make the, is Jimmy going to come out of the owner's box? Is Paul DeBodesta going to come out of the owner's box? And, like, just make the decision. And if they fire you, they fire you. You collect your checks and you go, you'll be hired tomorrow somewhere else. And, you know, like, that's, I'll change sports. That's what happened in 2018 with Ty Lue. Like, there was a mandate for Ty to play the kids. And Ty said, nope, I'm playing the guys I want to play. And they fired him, like, what, 5-6 games into the season. So that's also a route to take where you just take matters into your own hands. And if you remember, technically, Kevin did bench Deshaun in the Colts game last year. Like, no one really talks about that. No one – that was not an injury. That like, Kevin came out and said – I can't remember exactly what he said. You'd have to go back and look at the transcript. But basically, Kevin said he benched him for performance. So that has happened before. And obviously, it went right back to him the next week. He was coming off the shoulder. But essentially, he was benched because he stunk against the Colts last year after 4 or 5 throws. But, you know, I think he is being ordered to play. I don't know that. I want to be like, that's just my opinion. I'm just guessing on this. I think he's being forced to play him. And I don't see how anyone could, I don't see how he could possibly look at what's going on and say Deshaun Watson is helping us and making us a better football team. And also, you know, the line you started with, there are fires everywhere. It's not just him. Like, I fully admit that. Like, Kevin's having a really bad year, a really, really, really bad year. The defense is not the defense of last year, but Deshaun also is not the solution. Like, clearly, good court. Look at Washington. Like, they have a new head coach, but a lot of their personnel it hasn't changed very much from a 4-13 team, except the quarterback. And now they're 4-1. They've already matched their win total from last year because they have a quarterback that elevates the entire franchise and makes everybody else on the field better. And that is not happening here and hasn't ever since he got here.
Jason Lloyd joining us here on the show. See, it's what bothers me because I've been saying, like, guys, we traded Baker Mayfield for Baker Mayfield, and it still continues where 2021, we weren't a football team. We were out there figuring out something about a quarterback, trying to prove to ourselves whether or not he was worth it or not. And it seems like we're doing the same exact thing here, Jason. Like, we're not, are we winning games or are we just trying to figure out something that we really all know that he's not the guy, but we're trying to find different ways to figure out maybe he can be the guy. Like, offensive line, coach, offensive coordinator. Now we're going to wait for Nick Chubb to come back. Like, really, Nick Chubb's going to come back and make this all better? Did they needed Nick Chubb. They always need Nick Chubb, but they were able to get to the playoffs without Nick Chubb last year. So how many more things, how many more plates do we have to knock down that are spinning before we just come out and say it? Is it just because they owe him $92 million over the next couple of years? Okay, I mean, that's a valid reason, but I just want to hear that reason.
Yeah, that's the reason. And it's more than that because they kept pushing all that money forward. They kept redoing the contract. I was really surprised when they redid it again this summer. I asked
You were
AB I asked AB at the combine, I guess it was, do you have to redo it again? And he said not necessarily, and he didn't say anything else on it. And it's just because we've talked about this before, and I know you say all the time the salary cap is a myth. Well, here's where it's not a myth. Here's where it's very, very real. Because they can't do anything with them. They can't cut them. They can't trade them because of the cap and because of the hit that it puts on the organization. He's basically, his cap hit is basically the entire salary cap. And so that's, and by every time you redo it and you kick more money down the road, it tightens the chokehold on you for future years. And you have to get it right. Like we've talked about it. You have to get it right on the restructures. And for the most part, they've done a really nice job on the restructures. Like, you know, they redid Betonio, they did Wyatt, they did Miles. They've done basically every big contract on the roster, and it's worked out okay because these guys are still productive, and they've been relatively healthy. Some injuries here and there, but go back and look at the Falcons. I think we talked about this on the show a couple years ago. When you go back and look at the Falcons, and when the Falcons redid Matt Ryan one too many times, and it destroyed him for a couple years because he had I can't remember the number, but it was a massive cap hit when he wasn't even on the team. Well, that's the situation you're running into now, is there's going to be, you just keep pushing the money forward and pushing the money forward and pushing the money forward. There's going to come a point where he's not on the team and there's still a massive cap hit. Now, the cap obviously is going up at a much faster rate than it was when the Falcons and Matt Ryan were going through this. But the point is, like, I hear what you're saying a lot of times and the cap is a myth. In this instance, it's not at all a myth because that is why they are saddled with this contract that they can't get out of.
You know what we could do, Jason Lloyd from The Athletic? You know what we could do?
What's that?
To get out of this mess?
I can't wait to hear this. What?
Draft Garrett Nussmeier out of LSU this coming year. Put him on a rookie contract. Let's run this thing back with Kev and see whether or not we can get ourselves out of this, huh? Huh?
Well, you know what? I do think there comes a, if you want to take yourself seriously as an organization, there comes a point where I honestly think we're not here yet. It's first week in October. I think you have to play DTR at some point and see what you have before December. Oh, you have to see you have to have a quarterback next year, and it cannot be number four. You have to have somebody else, and you can give Jameis a try. I mean, we've seen other guys revitalize their career at different stages. Jameis ain't at the he ain't Flacco. He ain't pushing 40. He's still relatively young by NFL standards. Maybe he could be the next Sam Darnold and Baker and Geno Smith and these guys. Give it a look and see. But I really think you can't wait until December 3rd or whatever it is to run DTR out there, because then you just create more questions for yourself if he looks somewhat decent. And I think he will look. I liked him. Like, I really like DTR. I thought he was starting to figure it out last year when he got the concussion, but he looked good in the preseason. I just think you need to know what you have there before you go into draft season and have to draft a quarterback. Who knows? Maybe you ran into one. But the only way to know that is to play them.
I know we have baseball to get to, but they couldn't even get lined up right. Like, what happened?
Well, I know.
By the way, defense either. Like, what happened to this team that looked so professional a year ago in December?
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. The defense, and you're right. Like, obviously everybody knows about the play on the offense when they already had to waste a timeout less than 2 minutes into the half, and then they really needed to burn another one to be able to run a fourth and two, and they didn't want to burn a second time out, so they have to kick the field goal. Everybody knows about that. And what gets overlooked is the defense had 12 on the field twice on the same drive. Twice. So that's what I'm saying. Like, it's a mess everywhere. And that falls on Kevin. That's coaching. You know, that's being undisciplined and just not paying attention, not being aware. And that all falls on coaching. So I know we're making it a Deshaun issue, and it is, but there are issues that run deeper than that. But, you know, that's why he went out and got this guy and paid this guy, is to cover up all the other stuff and to make everybody else better. And that's not happening. Everything else has to be perfect for him, and that's not the way this is supposed to go.
Jason Lloyd joining us from The Athletic. Also, you hear him here on The Fan temporarily. Every now and then. Sporadically. There we go.
Yeah.
Sporadically, yeah. Not temporarily.
Coming to an end soon, Jason.
I thought something was happening to me I didn't know about.
Yeah, you better find out. There's a new sheriff in town now, buddy boy. So Lyman and I came in with good spirits. They were like, hey, you know what? Losses like yesterday happened with the Guardians. It happened. Class A gave up a 3-run bing bong. Yeah, you know what? No big deal. Then we were at each other's throats by accident, because all I asked was it a vote loss? Not that I believed it. I just wanted to ask him, do you believe Jason Lloyd that it was a vote loss?
No. Why would it be a vote loss?
I'm just asking the question. That's all.
Because
he pinch hit for John Kenzie Noel, which some people had upset with. But the biggest part was that he brought Emmanuel Clase out in the eighth.
No. No. Absolutely not. Like, he ran this. You're going to see this formula over and over and over again. He actually, a couple times, I thought he'd go get Boyd earlier. Like, you know, I'm surprised that he ran with Boyd as long as he did, but I mean, Boyd was terrific. And he pitched out of a couple spots. You know, the Tigers have a runner at third and their best hitter up in Riley Green. It's left on left, but that's an instance where I can't remember. I think it was like the third inning where I thought, okay, you better go get him. And they didn't even have anybody warming. But the way that he operated the bullpen, you know, is exactly how he's going to do it as long as they have life in this. And to be able to get 4 2/3 out of Boyd, I thought was really surprising. It was basically the exact same number of outs that Tanner Bibee got you. And then it's the same formula. You're going to run those same four guys out there. It's Cade Smith, Tim Herron, Gattis, and Clase. And all of those guys are capable of getting you more than three outs. So, and Clase is so good with the number of pitches, the way that he limits his pitches. Zach and I were talking about this. Zach Meisel, that he could overpower guys and pile up high strikeout numbers. Mariano Rivera never really did that either. And, of course, I'm not making a comparison to the greatest closer ever. I'm making a comparison to two guys who can throw a cutter 100 miles an hour. And you can try and pile up the strikeouts, or you can finish an inning in eight pitches and save yourself for tomorrow and the next day. and Clase seems to have taken the approach of being more economical with his pitches, it just didn't work. The part that's disappointing is in the Scooble game, when you can get Scooble out of a tie game, that's a game you have to win. And that's the part that makes it a little bit frustrating and disappointing, is you got him out of the game and it was tied. It was scoreless, but it's still tied. And that feels like a game you have to win. So now they need to go to Detroit and they really need to take care of business, because you're staring down the barrel of Scooble again in game five. And obviously you want to try and avoid that at all costs. It happens. Clase's human. I thought it was a little odd that he threw him three straight sliders. I talked to him about that after the game. He was trying to throw it in the dirt. Not only did he miss the dirt, he hung it over the middle of the plate. And actually the pitch before to Carpenter was even worse, and Carpenter just missed it. So, I mean, it happens. Clase just didn't have his command. It doesn't happen often. That was a bad time for it to happen. But also, you know, if you take the bias out of it, if you take the emotion of being a Guardians fan out of it, last night's also why clearly Derek Scooble is the Cy Young winner this year. The idea that Clase should be the Cy Young winner, I just can't get behind a guy who pitches one inning every day out dueling a guy who is as good as Derek Scooble is when he's the best starter in the American League. Scooble deserves a Cy Young. He's going to win it. And he showed you why yesterday.
Well, I hate you for that comment, but I can't disagree. Jason, thank you very much for the time.
All right, see you guys.
Jason Lloyd from The Athletic on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Okay.
Sometimes you just need a fix.
FML, my life.
My life.
FML,
fix my life.
Kenny, what do we do?
Fixing life.
My life.
All right, we were down in the dumps to start the show, bickering like a married couple, and we had two members of the show that were actually at the game yesterday. So there had to be a good time in the lead up to the game, as Owen and Mitch behind the glass probably had a great time together. Were you guys buying each other drinks? Were you guys, you know, holding hands? Do you do rally cap when it's scoreless, when it's 0-0? Were you locking arms?
You have to do that. Yeah, bottom of like the eighth inning, you got to get the rally cap.
What was that like, guys?
We didn't really speak much to each other, despite being two rows away.
Not only did we not speak much to each other, there was one interaction between the two of us in nine innings. And after Quan made the catch, I turned around. Mitch is behind me, and he goes, "I can't hear him. I just read his lips." He goes, "Hell of a game. Hell of a game." And that was it.
You really bonded.
He stood 10 feet away from me, my wife, and one of my children.
What? Yeah. You didn't say hi to his wife?
I did not.
God, you can't be helped.
Owen sent a picture yesterday at 4:11. Mitch is in the back.
He's in the background
by the
lurking.
Home run porch. Is that where you were?
Looks like the left field, yeah.
Looks like the Menendez brothers in the background of the Mark Jackson card.
You were that close and you didn't go over and talk at any point?
He was with his family.
Dude, you're supposed to go up and meet his wife and his kid.
Yeah, he works on the show that you work on.
I know.
No, you don't, because then you would have went and said something to him.
I was with my friends already, and I didn't want to bother them.
Mitch, your dad's an athletic director. Like, you can't. I want to blame your father, but I just have to blame you, because it's not Gary's fault. Your dad, like, you got to go up and say something to people, man. You can't just be a weirdo,
Mitch,
and lord over
them.
To
be fair,
in the
I was very dialed into the game. If that's an excuse.
No, you weren't.
Yes, I was.
Mitch, when did you see
a baseball game?
When did you see Owen first?
I didn't see him until I saw the picture in the group chat.
Did you go alone?
Oh, no, I met some friends there. Yeah, I mean, I went to the game alone, but I met with some friends.
So were you completely catatonic to them? You didn't pay attention to them at all during the game?
I didn't speak for much of the game until there were like some cheering moments. I was like sitting there with my rally towel like clenched in my fist.
What time did you show up?
Like 3:30, I think.
What time did you see him?
I noticed him.
Might have been 3.
About 4 o'clock.
So it was before first pitch?
Yeah.
You should have said something to him, Mitch.
Okay. I'm sorry I didn't.
You go up to a man and his wife that you work with. You say hello. That's what you do.
It's a great opportunity to network like a normal human being. You have interaction with people. What color?
You don't have to stay there with him.
But what is crazy is we talked about yesterday. I had a 500 level ticket. We got in early enough that there was a spot in left field on the drink rails, which is my preferred. I prefer right field, sure. But left field was fine. It was a little shadier, so a little cooler.
I'm surprised you were able to get down there.
But we walked in at 3 o'clock and we're like, no way, there's a spot here. Let's go. I had enough room that had Mitch come down and wanted to stand by us for a few minutes because he was kind of in a crowd up there. Would have had a great view other than 15 feet of left field.
Mitch, do you not like Owen?
I do like Owen.
He wanted to be weird.
Doesn't feel like it.
No, he's a weirdo. I got this lesson taught to me. I swear to God, I was in first grade or might have been kindergarten. Mr. McBurney, my school principal, his son was on a baseball team. I swear to God, his son was on a baseball team. They were all older. And I was like a bat boy for the other team. My buddy's older brother, Regis, I was like bat boy that day. I remember it was a bad, cold day, but they were still playing the baseball game. And I didn't go say hi to Mr. McBurney because I got in trouble earlier that week and I thought he would yell at me in front of my parents. I swear to God, I was afraid of that because my parents were at the game. And he pulled me aside on like Tuesday. They say, he goes, why didn't you say hi to me at all during the game? He goes, you understand that's weird, right? I'm like, I just thought you'd yell at me, Mr. McBurney. I'm sorry. He goes, son, you go and say hi to people. That's what you do.
That's what we're doing, Mitch. We're pulling you aside like Mr. McBurney.
Yes. Now you're making it out to be like, I'm afraid of Owen. I'm not afraid of Owen.
Apparently you are. Seems like it. I mean, is it rocky relationship behind the scenes that we don't know about?
You can't go and shake the hands of a veteran and his wife?
Don't put that on me. We're not doing that.
Have you ever told him thank you for your service even once in your life?
I'm sure
you
have.
No, you haven't. I'm sure you would know.
Owen, thank you.
Owen would have bought you a drink. Yeah, by the way, Owen, thank you for your service. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for your love of this country and your patriotism. Would you have bought a drink for Mitch?
Absolutely.
Have some nice bonding.
I bought a drink for a guy who dropped his twisted tea yesterday.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's playoff baseball. It's like I want to be playoff Santa Claus. Just give the gifts.
Wow.
It's Owen's largesse that has saved you from me completely ridiculing you for the rest of the show. You should know that.
You're going to do that for two consecutive hours.
Do you know how he has looked out for you behind the scenes when the axe could have come down? The firing squad
could
not have been there, and he stepped up for you?
Could not have saved you
more.
With management? Cigarette in my mouth and put the blindfold on.
With the corporate bigwigs that were in town? Yep. You didn't even know they were in town? He saved your ass, and that's how you repay him?
Thank you for your services, Owen.
You should know that.
Anyway, next time, say hi.
Yeah, say hi next time. Be affable for crying out loud.
I will.
Are you? Will you?
If there's a game five.
Coming up. Oh, great. Now you want the Guardians to lose so they can get to a game five.
I do want the World Series to go to 6 or 7 games, and I'll explain later.
I can't wait to hear that. John, now he's teasing his own bits on our show.
Mitch explains.
John Greco.
Yeah, who needs Clarissa?
Former Brown guard. Current, she still follow you on Twitter? Current analyst John Greco going to join us next on The Fan.